The reading tonight is taken from Judges, chapter 4, verses 1 to 16, and it can be found on page 245 in the Bibles. And it's about Deborah. After Ehud died, the Israelites once again did evil in the eyes of the Lord. So the Lord sold them into the hands of Jabin, a king of Canaan, who reigned in Hazor. The commander of his army was Sisera, who lived in Harosesh, Hagoyim. Because he had 900 iron chariots and had cruelly oppressed the Israelites for 20 years, they cried to the Lord for help. Deborah, a prophetess, the wife of Lapidoth, was leading Israel at that time. She held court under the palm of Deborah between Ramah and Bethel in the hill country of Ephraim, and the Israelites came to her to have their disputes decided. She sent for Barak, son of Abinoam, from Kedesh in Naphtali, and said to him, "The Lord, the God of Israel, commands you, go, take with you 10,000 men of Naphtali and Zebulun, and lead the way to Mount Tabor. I will lure Sisera, the commander of Jabin's army, with his chariots and his troops to the Kishon River and give him into your hands." Barak said to her, "If you go with me, I will go. But if you don't go with me, I won't go." "Very well," Deborah said, "I will go with you. But because of the way you are going about this, the honor will not be yours, for the Lord will hand Sisera over to a woman." So Deborah went with Barak to Kedesh, where he summoned Zebulun and Naphtali. 10,000 men followed him, and Deborah also went with him. Now Heber, the Kenite, had left the other Kenites, the descendants of Hobab, Moses' brother-in-law, and pitched his tent by the great tree in Zananim near Kedesh. When they told Sisera that Barak, son of Abinoam, had gone up to Mount Tabor, Sisera gathered together his 900 iron chariots and all the men with him from Harosesh Hagoyim to the Kishon River. Then Deborah said to Barak, "Go. This is the day the Lord has given Sisera into your hands. Has not the Lord gone ahead of you?" So Barak went down Mount Tabor, followed by 10,000 men. At Barak's advance, the Lord routed Sisera and all his chariots and army by the sword, and Sisera abandoned his chariot and fled on foot. But Barak pursued the chariots and army as far as Harosheth Hagoyim. All the troops of Sisera fell by the sword. Not a man was left.
Thank you, Lavisa. How many difficult words can you put in one passage? Please do keep your Bibles open. It's only half the story which was read. There's more to it. And this account is told in prose in chapter 4 and then in poem form in chapter 5. For those who missed last week, we are doing a series on the sermons from the book of Judges. Last week we looked at Ehud, the left-handed assassin who delivered the people of Israel, delivered the people from oppression. Now this week, the sermon title says it's girl power. So it is indeed girl power. So you know who these people are on the screen, and they really, really, really know what girl power is about, and they say it's a zig-a-zig ha. And I was wondering, what on earth is a zig-a-zig ha? So I looked on the Urban Dictionary, and it says this is something from the Spice Girls, and it has no meaning. So there you go. And also in this story, there's another famous person which is coming up, and that is Barak. Though not really him. The book of Judges certainly does have a cyclic pattern. It starts off with the Israelites doing what is evil in the sight of the Lord, and then God hands them over to another king, and this causes great distress. So they call out to God, saying, you know, what's going on? God, this is just too much. We have been oppressed, and this is such a bad leader. And then God raises up judges who would come and deliver them, who would come and save them. But when this judge dies, the people would relapse again, and they would go on and behave like there is no God, that God has abandoned them, that they completely forget who God is. So when the leader was with them, they behaved well, and as soon as they are gone, they're back into their old tricks. For instance, remember the story of Moses. He was having a chat with God on Mount Sinai, and the people have already been rescued from Egypt. So Moses is gone, and the people are thinking, oh, he's been away for some time. What shall we do? Oh, let's make an idol and start worshiping. And this is exactly what God told the people of Israel not to do. And this is exactly what they did. And this is the same with the book of Judges. When there is a strong judge watching, there is peace. But when the judge is not there, the Israelites go back into their old ways. They forget what God did for them. Maybe for us, we should be careful. Maybe for us, when we are being watched, maybe we do act more carefully. When there's attention paid to us, we act more carefully. When we are driving and we see there is a speed camera, we'll slow down because I think, oh, there's somebody watching. And Britain is a growing place for CCTV camera because, you know, the more CCTV cameras are there, the more you're watched, the more safe it is. Because the more you're watched, it seems that there is a safety. So the more there is a strong leader, there seems to be some safety. And so maybe with our bosses, the places we work, if our boss is watching, maybe we won't go on Facebook or have 3 cups of tea or whatever we do. And that you might have heard that Simon, our vicar, is away in Peru, and now because the boss is away, I'll be taking any comments, any improvements you want to do for St. Paul's. So it's a good way of doing what's not right when your boss is away. But there's another instance where this could be off memory. Do we easily forget what God has done for us? I think Jesus knew that we had a memory problem. He knew that people would, you know, he died, he went on the cross, he died for us, he saved us. But he knew people are going to forget this. So that on the Last Supper, what he did was he said, you know, do this in remembrance of me. So when we celebrate communion, we remember that salvation story, we remember what Jesus did. Remembering how he came to bring us salvation, how he came to teach us what it is to be with God. If we forget this, we forget what God has done for us, and we forget God. Now, I'm no expert in South African politics, but a few months ago, I was reflecting on what was going on in South Africa, on the how the South Africans were attacking the neighbors who were coming to seeking refuge in their country. And I was thinking, have they forgotten what a few years ago, what their parents and their parents' parents went through the apartheid? And it wasn't that long ago that it seems that they had forgotten what oppression meant, and they themselves become oppressive, the oppressors. Did anyone not tell the story? Has it been forgotten already? So there's something in us that makes us forgetful. So in the book of Judges, there are many, many examples of how people forget what they promised. They promised to obey God and do his will, but they forget, and they forget God. The book of Judges is also about the unexpected, how God uses the unexpected people to deliver Israel. For example, it starts off with God using Othniel, a younger brother. The younger brothers did not have much favor in ancient Israel. You remember the story of Jacob, how he kind of stole the elder brothership from Esau. So there wasn't much. The people of Israel didn't really like younger brothers. So God was using a younger brother to save Israel. Then God used Shamgar. Now Shamgar was, commentators say, his name sounds seems to be for a Canaanite. And God was using a Canaanite to deliver people from Israel. And now God was using Deborah, a woman, to be the judge of Israel, a woman to deliver Israel. In that society, women had no power, they just followed men. But God uses her. So this story is just undermines racism, undermines sexism of how God uses people to be judges. And the account puts Deborah in the beginning, saying that she, in the reading we found, it says that Deborah was a prophetess, female, she was a woman, and the wife of Lapidot. And commentators even go on to say that her husband is, name sounds strange because it means it's quite a feminine name. So maybe it was more explaining who she was. So in one sense, it's explained that she was a woman of fire. And this woman of fire is being put to lead Israel. So Deborah is the first named woman, named prophet. She's the only woman judge in the legal sense who was solving conflicts. She had a special insight. She had wisdom to decide between conflicting parties. And in chapter 5, if you read, she's a poet. And Deborah is also called the mother of Israel. So she had other responsibilities of being a parent of Israel, of being a judge, a prophet, a leader, a poet. Seems to be a lot of work. So talk about girl power. She was indeed doing a lot of work. Going back to today's reading again, in chapter 4, Israel finds itself in trouble because of sin and now under the control of the king Jabin of Canaan, who was the ruler of Hazor. Now, if you thought that was confusing, where was he really ruling? It merely means that ancient Canaan had independent states itself. So Jabin was the king of Hazor, a state in Canaan. And Jabin had an army commander who was called Sisera, who had 900 chariots, whom he used to oppress the people of Israel. So the people of Israel just cried out to God. And they probably had something in the back of their mind thinking that God did really save them from Egypt. The story doesn't tell us, but the Israelites were not doing anything as of a resistance or having some other revolution going on, but they just cried out to God, God, come and help us. And Deborah gets a word from the Lord, which she gives to Barak. The Lord, the God of Israel, commands you, go, take with you 10,000 men of Naphtali and Zebulun and lead the way to Mount Tabor. I will lose Sisera, the commander of Jabin's army, and his chariots and his troops to Kishon River and give them to your hands. So once again, just like the old days of the great warriors Joshua, Israel is being challenged to take on a mighty army of Sisera. The war seems to be with the mighty armies of Sisera, with chariots and all this against Israelites, just foot soldiers. But God gives a promise. God will go before them. God will lure Sisera to Kishon River, and the promise is that God will give Sisera to Barak's hands. But Barak doesn't seem to be in a rush. Seems like he is probably not that impressed with Deborah's command, or he might not be too sure. But Barak has a higher calling to be a deliverer for Israel. But is he cowardly? So he asks Deborah, can you go with me? If you go, I will go, says Barak. And I'm sure in the early days, when the first hearers heard this message, they had a bit of a chuckle. They said, thinking, why is he scared? It's a bit like, you know, going to the dentist when you're little and you are asking your mom to come along with you because you need someone for the support. And but Barak has been given this calling to be a deliverer, but he is reluctant. He is hesitant. You might be thinking, why didn't I go on holiday? Why didn't I do something else? Why am I here? Why did I say yes to you when she asked me to come? Why wasn't I busy? So with all these excuses, Barak was not doing what God is calling him to do. Another example is Jeremiah. When God called Jeremiah to be his servant, to be his messenger, Jeremiah said, Lord, but I am only a boy. Who will take me seriously? Maybe sometimes we are like that. When God asks us to do something, asks us, and commands us, we bring out other excuses and we fail and we put other things before God. Even little things sometimes. Just last week, I had a funny example in my life. I had an email from Steve Holt, who's sitting right over there. I'll just point to him. Who said, Sylvester has a men's group. Why don't you organize a day out to do paintballing and go-karting and all this? I said, okay. This was last week, and then I got the email which said this is the date. So I was thinking, oh, organize. Now that seems like quite hard work, organize. And organize men as well. Oh, that's, and they'll be like, oh, we'll come, we'll not come. And so there's going to be lots of work to do, and I felt, oh, it's just too much work. So I checked my diary. And in my diary it says, oh, I'm on holiday. I thought, oh, great. I don't have to do it. I'm on holiday. So I emailed back Steve saying, sorry, I'm on holiday, really. I would love to do, but I can't make it. To which Steve replied back, not so fast, Sylvester. You could do it on another day. So, yeah, maybe we do sometimes when there are opportunities and when sometimes God is calling us to serve him. God is calling us to take his message, to be his messengers. We are sometimes scared, we are sometimes lazy, or we sometimes don't want to do it and put other things in front of us instead. And maybe, going back to the story, maybe Barak knew that that God was with Deborah, and he wanted that assurance that God was with him in the battle. However, this does not go into plan. And this is something which not every warrior wants to hear. Deborah says, well, because you're acting like this way, you know, because you're acting like a little child, the honor will not be yours. Sisera will be handed over to a woman. Moses said something like this when he was first called. He said, he told God, when God called him to go to the Egyptian Pharaoh, Moses said, I will go if you go with me. But Barak here is completely different. He doesn't tell God, but he tells Deborah, I will go if you go with me. Nevertheless, with all this hesitation, Barak is named in the book of Hebrews as one who had faith and administered justice. For I'm sure God is a gracious God who saw a mustard seed of faith in Barak. And so he's named as one with faith. Now Barak manages to get his troops, and Sisera is drawn into the war with his 900 chariots. And then Deborah gives the signal. Go, this is the day the Lord has given Sisera into your hands. Has not the Lord gone before you? From the outside, it looks like Barak is doing all the hard work, getting all the people organized and everything. But actually the Lord is the one who has gone before. The Lord is the one who is in battle. He has gone before the troops. The Lord is the one who is fighting. And Barak and his troops are just merely helpers. How God does this comes from Deborah's poem, again in chapter 5. A storm helps Barak's armies. So the chariots get stuck in the mud, and they had to abandon the chariots and run away by foot. So there's irony in this, that a storm should cause the defeat of Sisera's army. Now the Canaanites worshipped the weather god, and she was also the warrior god. So isn't it funny, in one sense, that the God of Israel was so powerful and mighty that he was able to defeat the God of Cana, who was the storm god, who was the warrior god? But that is how powerful the God of Israel is. Sisera might have thought that he'll come back another day. On his way, he comes up to a place called Elon Bezanim, where a tribe called the Quenites live. Now, there were a family which made all kinds of bronze and iron. They were like the Bedouins. Among these was a woman called Jael. The tired Sisera came to her tent, and he thinks, "I am among friends." The Quenites were, as they were Bedouins, they gave hospitality for people who passed their tents. And Sisera thought, "I am among friends." They didn't have services stations like we do now when we go on the motorway. So the Bedouins, through their hospitality, helped the people. But Jael has other plans. Just like last week, Ehud tricked King Eglon, Jael tricks Sisera and ends his life. She kills him with a tent peg. So Jael is the world's first tent peg assassin. Sisera is dead. Later on, Barak comes looking for Sisera, and he comes across Jael, who shows Barak what he was looking for. Thus, what Deborah prophesied came true. Barak did not get his honor. It was Jael, a woman who got the honor. So through this passage, through Deborah, the Barak and Jael and all these deliverers involved, the real person who is working, the real hero is God. For verse 23 says, "On that day God subdued Jabin, the Canaanite king, before the Israelites. The kingdom of God had won against the oppressive kingdom of Jabin." Reading this passage, you wonder how messy is this situation. The story is full of suspense and drama. It might be a story about girl power, but God is behind this. God's purpose is working out. When the Israelites were under Jabin, it was God's purpose working out. When Deborah told Barak to attack, it was God's purpose working out. God is at work. He's the Savior who comes to rescue. And Sisera ends up in a horrible death, and Israel has 40 years of peace. When reading this story, there's an unease about the blood that is involved, the blood and the murders and the using tent pegs and all this. And the book of Judges is full of stories of blood and violence. People start off being with God, then they do evil in the sight of God, then they're slaves to an oppressive force, and then God sends a deliverer who rescues Israel and brings salvation to Israel. Time and time after again, the Bible tells us how God rescues his people from oppression, how God gives his people salvation. And in the end, God sent his Son, the ultimate deliverer, who delivered us once and for all. There was once a vicious circle of violence, which Jesus broke on the cross. And that is the good news. In the account of Deborah and Jael, God used women to deliver Israel in a patriarchal society. God used foot soldiers to fight Sisera's chariots. And God chose the cross. God chose the foolish things of the world to put shame to the wise. God chose what is weak of this world to put things that are mighty. Jesus died that horrible death on the cross to save us. Some might say, how foolish is that? But that is the power from which we are being saved. It might look foolish. It might be a stumbling block. But Paul, as he says in Corinthians, for the message about the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing. But to us who are being saved, it is the power of God. I wish to end with a question, something to think about. My friends, we have been saved by the ultimate deliverer. Do we take that seriously and do what God is asking us to do? Or do we just forget what God has done and just act like the Israelites did all those years ago?